Welcome to NFL Total Access, the locker room. I am Mike Garofalo.
And I'm Michael Robinson.
All right, Mike Rob, we're going to be getting into football, the goings on midway through. You see, it's just not clean. There's no midway point. You got the 17 games. Is it 8 games? Is it 9 games? Although technically 18 weeks, we should do it at 9 weeks. Whatever. It's about midway through the NFL season. But first, I want to ask you about something that's near and dear to your heart. It is your Excel to Excellence youth football program. We hear about it regularly on GMFB weekend, but let's talk about it right here, Mike Rob. How many years has this been going on, by the way, now?
Oh, man, like ever since 2010, Jeezy. 2010 is when I first started it. And really, it's two nonprofits, it's two foundations. One is Excel to Excellence Youth Football Foundation. That's the one I'm always talking about on the football, on NFL Network and all of our shows. Then there's also just Excel to Excellence Foundation, Inc., right? And that's more of the community-based foundation. I have a learning center here in Richmond, Virginia, where, you know, the local government here was kind enough to notice the need on the eastern side of Richmond. And I was one of the organizations that's doing a lot in the eastern side of Richmond. And so we made a deal so that, you know, we can get it. We can get a learner center and a resource center to the communities that need it. And when you talk about the Youth Football Foundation, Excel to Excellence Youth Football Foundation, really the goal of that, what we do is we run youth football leagues, right? And we try to provide resources to our coaches so that our kids get the best possible football experience that they can get, right? And it's not just making sure that they're great on the football field, Jeezy. Like I always tell people all the time, I wouldn't be doing what I do for a living right now, doing this podcast with you, being on NFL Network, without at 9 years old a coach telling me, dude, like you have the power of influence. You can speak. We were at practice one day and we were playing a big game and our coaches were yelling and players were yelling. I was 9 years old. I'll never forget. And I'm thinking to myself, what the hell is going on? Like, we got a big game going on and it's a bunch of chaos and a bunch of yelling back and forth. And I remember screaming, saying, man, shut up, be quiet, you know? And when I said it, everybody in our little group shut up and listened to what I had to say. And that coach pulled me to the side and said, look, dude, you got to watch the books you read. You got to watch the music you listen to. You got to watch what you watch on television because you have the power of influence. What you say and when you open your mouth, people listen. And Jeezy, that stayed with me like throughout my entire life. And so I always wanted to create a football, you know, nonprofit where we were providing resources so that kids understand what they're good at, you know, in life. For instance, a quarterback drops back, right? Mm-hmm. Notices a three deep defense, right? The three deep defense has two flat cover guys. One is a linebacker, one is a safety. By the time this 10-year-old hits his fifth step, he's throwing the ball high and outside to the out where the flat coverage is the linebacker because the linebacker's less athletic. He can't open his hips to get underneath the pass, right? Well, the same broad brain processes that are happening with that kid, somebody who works at Google who builds websites for 40 years is doing the same thing. They're just recognizing patterns, right? And our babies have been doing it since we were really, really little, but nobody tells us the verbiage. Nobody explains to us exactly what we're doing. And so I wanted to create a foundation that kind of helps coaches and helps kids kind of understand that, Jeezy, because it's a 1.6 chance that our babies make it to the National Football League. 1.6, yeah. Right? To me, that number says that it is a 98.4% chance our baby's going to be doing something else in life besides playing football, right? So we got to get something out of it more than just the opportunity for glitz and glamour. And in the communities I come from, bro, if you're not rapping, if you're not singing, if you're not playing basketball or football, you're just stuck in what we call the trap or an environment that it's hard to get out of. So that's really the precipice of why I started Excel to Excellence Youth Football Foundation and Excel to Excellence. I know I'm long-winded, bro, but as you can see, I have my elevator pitches down. I know exactly what you're saying.
You tell the kids about the elevator pitch, they need to know about the elevator pitch because that's how life works here. But here's what it is to me, okay? I'm going to give you a comparison. It's Mr. Miyagi, right? Paint the fence, sand the floor.
Yeah.
What's the other one? Wax on, wax off. Wax How did off. I forget yep. that one? That's the most popular one. And so Daniel's son, throughout the course of this stuff, doesn't realize he's learning karate through all this stuff. So on the football field, you're teaching these the kids things to make them better football players, because that's what they're interested in. That's what's right in front of their face. But by the same token, you're teaching them things that are going to be applicable in their life, and you're teaching them life skills. And I know that that's what's important to you. And I've long since said, and you know, look, we work for the NFL Network, and we know that youth football is a big, very important initiative for the league. Absolutely. Right now.
Way to play.
To play
yeah. curriculum. Yep.
But this, I played the game. I've covered the game. I truly believe that football teaches you things about life and about accountability that you won't learn elsewhere. There's a clip. I'm going to send it to you when we get done. This guy, I think he got on the bus and something happened on the bus. Some kind of criminal activity happened on the bus. And I believe the bus driver interfered on behalf of the victim, and he gives the interview, and in the interview, he says, "I'm a football guy." He said, "Why'd you do this?" "Well, I'm a football guy," right? Uh-huh. That's what I got to send it to you.
Send it to me, man.
But yeah, it's phenomenal.
He's right. Like, football has directed a lot of the things that I do now as an adult. Like, Jeezy, you probably don't know this. I think I've said this to you before, but like every Sunday before the games come on, and when it's the off season, we just do it in the morning. I have like a team or a squad meeting with my family just so that we can get just so we can talk about the goals for the rest of the week. And I'm talking to them like they're a football team about to go out there and actually compete. Right. So, you know, it affects, you know, this game of football affects every part, you know, of our lives. And we talked about the way to play. We announced the award winners for high school and flag football every Saturday on Good Morning Football Weekend. That way to play curriculum, man, it gives what I love about it and what I love that the National Football League is doing. It gives parents and coaches, regardless of your skill level, right, the ability to look at something and say, okay, I can hold this coach accountable because I know what he should be coaching my child to do right now. Again, it's like a playbook for success. So kudos to the National Football League for that. Kudos for the National Football League for supporting all of, you know, all of the initiatives that former players that are still out there, you know, basically telling a story for the National Football League. It's former players like myself who have leagues, who are out here coaching and doing things that they have to do to continue the narrative that, yeah, football is family and football is a place where you can learn the sustainable skills that make you successful in life. And, you know, that's something that happened for me.
Awesome stuff, Mike Robb. First of all, tell us where people can find out more before we move on to the football stuff.
Yeah, to the youth football stuff, e2efootball.com and excel2excellence.org are the two places for you to make sure you are all updated and donate. Yes, we need donations so that we can continue to do what we do in the community.
Check it out. Great stuff regarding the future of these young kids as well as the future of football. I love the way it's all intersecting. All right. Speaking of the future of football, let's look kind of toward the second half of you like that transition. Let's look toward the second half of the NFL season by talking about some things that happened here in the first half. Some of the surprises for you and for me that we didn't see coming. You start us off. What's your biggest surprise here in the NFL so far?
Biggest surprises, man. I mean, obviously, you know, the Packers, I thought that they would have some issues being that, you know, Aaron Rodgers talked all that, you know what, in the offseason and, you know, the drama and I just want some say in the players we have and all of those things. Well, he got his wish, you know, we got Randall Cobb there, whatever. They looked terrible week one, but then they've come out and they actually played pretty well, man. They're playing really good football. But to me, the verdict is still going to be out on the Green Bay Packers until they get to the NFC Championship game. Like, I have to see Aaron Rodgers get over that hump, and he does not play well in those games as well. And then, to me, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Kansas City Chiefs should be better, right? I've been arguing with a lot of our colleagues at NFL Network about whether it's, you know, Kansas City just not playing well is the reason why they're playing, you know, they're being like this, or our other teams just have kind of figured them out. And I think it's a little bit of both, right? And I really think that this team, we keep saying it, from a mentality standpoint, they want to push the ball downfield and throw the ball for 1 million yards every single game. But defenses are playing them, because we have to understand defenders get paid too. Defensive coordinators get paid too to figure all of this stuff out, right? defenses are playing them so that they have to run the football, and they just haven't been consistent enough with it. To me, their offensive line is built to run the football. They're not these one-on-one pass protection type of a guys. And when you press Patrick Mahomes to make a play, he can make any play out there. But what happens is you get what I call hero ball, where mistakes are forced based off of trying to play out of your mind as opposed to just playing within the play. I think that's really what's going on with Kansas City. And those two are the teams that shocked me, man.
Someone suggested, I can't remember who it was, I'd give that person credit. Someone suggested that Kansas City has done a lot of things, a lot of sensational things. Left-handed passes, no-look passes. Last night, Travis Kelce lateraled behind his back to Patrick Mahomes. And there's so much trickery in these things that they get bored with ordinary stuff, that it's no longer fun for them to play ordinary football, and that's why they're struggling. Do you agree with that? Is there something to that, or is it just, you know, hey, they're taking away that deep, the deep stuff, the big play stuff? And for, I said to my friend, there was the one drive that ended with Mahomes hitting somebody in the face and the ball bounced up and they pay. I said, the more plays you run as an offense, the higher the probability you're going to make a mistake. So that's why teams are playing them the way they, because eventually, as good as they are, they're going to make a mistake. So which of those two theories or a combination of both is it for you?
Well, I think that's why Bill Belichick plays teams the way he does, right? Yeah. At the end of the day, you can beat a Bill Belichick defense if you continue to take the pass that the defense allows you to take and systematically take it all the way downfield. I think there is something to that, Jeezy. I think human nature allows us to get bored. It's kind of like when a head coach is at a place for so long, we always say that his message is getting stale and guys have heard it and all those things. Kind of the same energy, right? I think it is a little bit of that there, but the point of it is, and I think that's our subconscious doing that a little bit. I'm getting a little spiritual with you a little bit. I think that's our subconscious selves that are telling us to do that. But I think kind of what makes Tom Brady great and what makes some of the greatest players great is that they're able to kind of overcome that. They're able to create a new challenge. You hear about Michael Jordan creating things up in his head so that he can be motivated to go out there and play well. Tom Brady does the same thing.
That's where I was going, which makes it that much more impressive that Brady has stayed sharp for as long as he has. He's built differently.
Absolutely. He is built differently. And I think since we always talk about mental health, man, when you can see yourself, doing great things and not allowing the boredom or not allowing, you know, your subconscious self, so to speak, kind of overcome you, I think that's when the greatness comes out. And so, yeah, what you said definitely makes me look at Brady even more great. Like, damn, dude, how do you do it?
Speaking of Brady, I'm going to put a button on the Packers here. Just in talking to folks down in Tampa Bay, and I'm sure they're not all going to agree with this, and it's just the opinion of a select few. But I gather, as particularly talking to one person who said, you know, look, I don't want to go to Lambeau, right? We got to continue to win games because I don't want to have to go and do that again. Now, in a full stadium with Rodgers playing the way that he's playing, it's amazing that they've turned the adversity into a positive for them. It's given them an edge. Trust me, they could go 16-1. They could win the Super Bowl, and it won't solve the problems that are underneath there. They could still pop up again and derail the Rodgers era, despite the success that they're having on the field. So it's impressive. It's why I think Matt LaFleur said it right, Tom Pelissero, who wants everybody to say the name right, is one of the leading candidates, if not the leading candidate, for Coach of the Year. Let's move on to some of the other surprises. I'll throw one, and we talk about good surprises. Let's talk about a bad surprise. I picked the New York Giants to win the NFC East.
You picked it too, Jason.
Don't make me do it. You know what I'm going to do.
What? I said they would be the most complete team if Daniel Jones plays like his 6th overall picking.
Ifs and buts with Andy and nuts, we'd all have a merry winter solstice or Christmas, whatever one you want to celebrate. That's the old saying. Yes, that's part of it. As I thought he was gonna, here's my problem with Daniel Jones coming off that game on Monday night. You had a chance twice in the fourth quarter to perform in a big stretch. My thing about Daniel Jones was the first glimpse we really got of him was that game in Tampa Bay a couple of years ago when he was a rookie, and he came in and he led an amazing comeback against the Buccaneers in the second half. And it was like, okay, this is what they saw in him. This is why he was the sixth overall pick. Because even Eli Manning early in his career, because we've compared them so much, he struggled early in his career, but there were times where he put the team on his back where you said, okay, now I see it. Now I know that despite the four interception games that he's had, despite the all shucks look, there's a pulse there. And there's a guy who's going to make plays in big moments. That was another chance for Daniel Jones to make big plays in big moments. He didn't do it. That's what I wanted to see this year. I'm disappointed he hasn't done it. And the Giants got a huge decision to make this offseason, because unless he makes some kind of U-turn here and becomes a guy that's going to lift this team down the back half. And by the way, I do think there's a chance they win some games in the back half of their schedule, which could now make it, if you're the Giants, a tougher call. Geez, which team were we? Just kind of like last year, okay? So Daniel Jones, I'm disappointed. That's a bad surprise for me. I thought he was going to have more of the moments that I'm looking for. He hasn't had a Mike Rapp.
I was disappointed. I'm disappointed. I mean, you've heard me talk about it, but I knew something was up, and I know this is old, but you can say it, whatever. Eli Manning, yeah. You talk about the clutch plays he's made, all of those things. That's how he garnered his respect. That's how he garnered his OG status and all of that within the organization. This is Daniel Jones, what, fourth year? Fourth year, right? I think it's his fourth.
Third or fourth.
Okay. Whatever. All right. Either way, he's not a young guy rookie anymore. And this past training camp, for him to feel like, as the franchise quarterback, for him to feel like that he has to enter into a team fight, to me showed that he was still trying to get respect from his teammates. And that's when I said, you know what? Daniel, I don't know if this season is going to be great for the New York Giants. To me, you don't have to do that when you're the franchise quarterback. Your respect is just, it just happens because of the way that you play. You don't have to jump into no intra-team type of a fight, Jeezy. Come on, man. It got to be better than that. Hold up. What do you think about the Saints, though? What do you think about how Sean Payton's been managing that group, man? I'm feeling it right now, dog.
I had no doubt they were going to be a competitive.
They're winning games, man. They just beat the Bucks.
I loved them last week. I told you guys on the show. I don't make picks. So I hate to be this guy, and I'm wrong a lot, but just sometimes you just get a feeling. And I said, because we did a spooky games segment, and that was my pick. It was which favorites should be on alert. Which did anybody put the Jets or the Bengals on alert? Maybe we should have if we didn't.
We should have.
But to me, that just felt like, you know, the kind of game that the Saints were going to buck up. And Dennis Allen, I'm still waiting for him to get his second chance as a head coach, because he's done a phenomenal job. And I really got to grade him incomplete, because the Raiders were a mess when he was the head coach of the Raiders. So I'm surprised that he wasn't more of a candidate last year. We'll see about this year. But anyway, there's no doubt in my mind that Sean Payton was going to put this team in position to be as successful as possible. I couldn't put them in the contender status, and I still can't because I didn't trust in Jameis Winston enough, and now I don't know that I trusted Trevor Siemian or Taysom Hill or whatever kind of combination. But they'll be competitive and they'll win games, and they'll probably make the playoffs. I mean, they're sitting in great position now from a standings perspective.
I think they will make the playoffs, and I think it cannot be overstated. You mentioned Dennis Allen. I think the secondary and that defense for the Saints, from a personnel standpoint, they match up really well against the Bucs skill, man. I mean, they have the defensive backs that seem to get into Mike Evans' head. You know, they have the makeup to kind of piss Tom Brady off. And half of the time, man, they were making Tom uncomfortable with just three and four rushers. So to me, they just had the right ingredients to beat Tom Brady and the Buccaneers, man.
Well, this is why I felt good about calling the potential upset was of the five lowest total yards output for the Buccaneers last year. Three of those games were against the Saints. And that includes a win, by the way.
Yeah.
It was in the bottom five of their, 19 games that they played or 20 games that they played last year?
Your boy, the real Carson Wentz, showed up this past week.
No. Here's the thing. Because the real Carson Wentz. Here's the problem. And I said this to people. he's still got the vestiges of the last couple of years still inside of him, right? Talk about Jalen Hurts flushing it. You still got to – there's a little bit more that needs to be flushed out. So he's going to have a little bit of the relapses or the tremors from that, from the quake of the last few years, whatever metaphor that you want to use there, he's still going to have those. So that was the Wentz of the last couple of years. But I said this is what – they're in the middle of the stretch.
Yeah.
Five games. When they were 1-5, I said they got five games coming up. They're going to win four of them. Okay, they're going to lose one. So that was the loss this past weekend. The Jets and the Jaguars are on the back end here. They win those games. They're 5-5. They're at 500. They're right back into it. But, yeah, they're a little disappointing that they haven't been a little bit higher and that those a 4-1 stretch should have been vaulting them into a winning record.
And I know we got to go, Jeezy, but look, I just wanted to say this on that game. Yes, the Colts lost, and I know before that game I was saying, look, if they lose to Tennessee, the season's over.
Yeah.
But where they did win is – they did put the NFL's leading rusher, most dominant guy, on the sideline for a while. And that could do something to the Tennessee Titans season. So I do think Indy will be back in this thing before it's all said and done.
Yeah, one more pleasant surprise for me, Mac Jones. I think he's been just on point and running things the way that the best you could have possibly expected for him coming out of college. So
he's
good
so
on you,
Tom Mac. Brady, isn't he? He's so damn Tom Brady, man. Like, they went out and got the damn clone of the guy that they have. For
which is why,
years.
No matter what he does in his career, you're going to say, well, 14 teams passed on him. I don't know that any of those 14 situations would have been.
No.
Yeah. That's the thing about drafting is sometimes it's not as simple as, well, we could have taken that guy. Like, the people killing the Eagles for not taking Justin Jefferson, which absolutely was a mistake. He would not be producing the way that he's produced over the last year and a half if he was in Philly. Going to Minnesota was just a better situation for him. But again, still a mistake. They should have taken him over Jalen Reagor.
What the hell is wrong with Minnesota? I'm sorry. I don't know what I just
Well, that's one of your bad surprises.
Yeah, that's my bad surprise. I just expect them to be good. And I can't blame it on Kirk Cousins. You look at the numbers, and he looks good throwing the football and stuff. I mean, everything is just okay, but they lose.
Oh, just okay. That's wrong with them. Just okay. Not good enough in the NFL, particularly when you're a quarterback in a passing league, when they have made the rules easier for you. It's incredible what a great season for a quarterback used to be and what it is now. And he's not great. In a different era, pick up those stats in his performance, he would be great. But right now, he's just middle of the road, and it's just not good enough for the Minnesota Vikings here.
Well, look, man, that'll do it for this week's episode of Total Access at the Locker Room, Jeezy. For more insight with the Locker Room Point of View, check out the latest episodes every Wednesday and Friday on Apple and Spotify.